Good morning, everyone. Calling to order the Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting of January 15th. I'd like to have a roll call, please.
Member Talley?
Here.
Member Riley? Member Lowe?
Here.
Member Tuttle?
Here.
Member Guthrie?
Here.
Member Gibson?
Here.
Member Hatterman?
Here.
All right, thank you very much. At this time, I'd like to invite the public, members of the public, anyone who has an item to share with the committee, anything that's not on today's agenda.
And I will clarify, too, that I'm going to get some clerk direction on this. It was brought to my attention that there's only one item here for public comment, and it's for items not on the agenda, but there's nothing that says for items on the agenda. So for right now, this can be included to be both on agenda or off agenda for now, but I'll get clarification from the clerk's office on how to move forward with that.
Shall I? I don't mind on agenda items also just opening it up for public comment before we move to the next item.
Sounds good.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so at this time, we're at open public comment for items not on the agenda. Thank you. Your microphone.
Okay.
There you go.
How's that?
Yes.
Gordon Hensley, San Luis Obispo Coast Keeper at Environment in the Public Interest. And there's some concern among our side, being the client group, that we'd really like to have a face-to-face with you all. And there is an opportunity coming up in February. We'll be back in front of the judge for some mediation to be happening. It'd be really great if any or all of you could show up there. We can get you the details. And then I have one question. Brad, the last time I was here, you mentioned that the county is working on their water rights permit. Can you expand on that, what that means? What is that permit?
Before you answer. I think at this time we're just taking public comment. I think if there are questions that we can address later in the meeting, we will. Do you want to just put your comment on the record?
Yes.
Or your question on the record, please?
Yeah. What is the purpose of a water rights permit? It has nothing to do with our lawsuit. It's a whole different thing. But it might be good to get some clarity on what that permit is, what it does. And you guys have been paying for water for an awful long time, and it doesn't sound like the proper permits are in place. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other member of the comment wish to address the committee? Thank you.
Mic's on, yeah? Okay, great. Good morning, all. Jesse Swanheiser, who's Sycamore Law, one of the plaintiffs' counsel in the Lopez Dam litigation. I appreciate an opportunity to talk. I wanted to just address two quick points. First is the Ninth Circuit decision that came out in fall, which I'm sure you're all at least aware of generally. And then secondly, I wanted to talk a little bit more about what Gordon just mentioned in terms of upcoming settlement negotiations and the potential for this group to really meaningfully engage at this stage in the process. So with respect to the Ninth Circuit decision, I imagine this group knows the Ninth Circuit vacated in its entirety the preliminary injunction that had been issued in 2024. And while we're disappointed, we're not surprised. It was, from a legal geek's point of view, a pretty interesting legal question. How do you balance the interests of multiple listed species? But as I said to this group last year, even a quote-unquote win at the Ninth Circuit really doesn't win anything. As far as we're concerned, it was still a long and challenging waste of money and resources in which no one really won. We still find ourselves back where we started. The Ninth Circuit's decision orders the district court to more fully and explicitly consider the impacts beyond the steelhead and on tidewater goby and red-legged frog, which, as I understand the science, and I don't understand it particularly well, really does complicate things in terms of Lopez Dam operations, particularly with respect to breaching the sandbar and whatever else. And then I think Lastly, yeah, we're just disappointed that we feel like this complicated and extended the process. It really says nothing from our perspective. You have your own lawyers that you trust more than you trust me, I'm sure. But from our perspective, it says nothing about the merits of our case, the likelihood of success. Ultimately, it certainly doesn't dispose of the case. So we are where we're at, and I really do want to focus on the upcoming settlement opportunity. We think it is a real opportunity. February 6th, there is a meeting with a magistrate judge in the Central District in Los Angeles. As Gordon just mentioned, we encourage you individuals to come, not just send representatives, because as an example here, most of what you get, as I understand it, in terms of information about the litigation, comes as filtered through your lawyers or through me. And I think there's real value in face-to-face conversations with Gordon and the other client representatives that aren't being mediated by us. So the parties are exchanging proposals right now. I can't discuss the details of those proposals. I want to encourage you to meaningfully engage. You should see the letter that we sent last week laying out our initial set of proposals, which we expect responses to, and for you to engage with those proposals and give direction to your counsel in terms of reaching a settlement. We think that the proposals we made in terms of flows, which are arguably the biggest issue, particularly from this group's perspective, we think they're both scientifically defensible. But we also think that they're sustainable and provide enough flexibility for you guys to address different circumstances like droughts and others. So anyhow, we hope that we will see you in February in LA and that we don't end up in separate rooms with the judge mediating between us. It seems like an awful waste of money to send everybody to LA to sit in different rooms when we could have done it via Zoom. So if we're all going to be together in LA, it seems like we ought to sit face to face. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Anyone else from the public wishing to address this committee on items not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none, I'll move to item 3, which is meeting minutes. The November 20th meeting minutes were attached to the packet, circulated for review. Are there any comments or changes to the draft minutes? Seeing none, may I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed or abstain? Thank you. Motion passes.
Dave, David, do you need to do a roll call vote, or are you okay with that?
That works. Yeah.
That works? Okay.
Unanimous? Oh, okay. You need, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. Thank you. Moving on to item 4 is the operations report, starting with item A, water plant operations.
All right, I'll start with the water plant operations and give you guys the current conditions. Right now, the Lopez Water Treatment Plant is operating at 3.9 MGD. The state water project was just brought back online. We're running at 0.2 MGD. The downstream release is at 2.8 MGD. Elevation is 513.26 feet. That puts us at a capacity of 83.5%. The storage is 41,316 acre feet, and rain to date is 16.12 inches. I'll caveat the state water project number. Some of you guys might know about this or not, but the meter down there in the vault for our turnout, it was a pretty high flow meter. And so to meet some of the lower demands, such as say San Miguelito, when no others are taking state water, we were able to get the state water project to put in a lower flow meter down there. It does not affect our ability to provide full deliveries up around 4.5 million gallons per day through the state water pipeline, but it does allow us to get much, much lower flows now. So we should be able to operate the state water project a little more efficiently now with that meter. So I say that just because if you see 0.2 MGD and you've never seen that before, that's why. So.
Thank you.
Yep. I'll move right on down the list, I guess, here.
Okay.
Projected reservoir levels. We have both, what months were these? November and December's projection reports. This is December's. As you can see on this report, the gentleman in the audience, Jesse Swanhauser, had mentioned that the PI had been vacated. Therefore, this line starting next month, assuming whatever happens in settlement negotiations, we will be removing the lighter green line in the middle because that was the PI flows. We are adjusting back to the interim downstream release schedule flows. That is the upper line. And then the yellow line is assuming we get no rainfall after this date. Any questions on the projection?
Where are we at this point as far as average rainfall for the year?
I would have to look at that. Typically in the area, we're somewhere around, for the year, it's usually 20 inches about, and we're sitting at about 16. So. Any other questions on the projection? I usually jump over the November water report straight to December. So yeah, we're sitting around 75% of the way of the year water year through. Everybody's water usage is tracking pretty well. I don't see anything alarming or any recommendations. I know that it's been brought to my attention that some of the numbers on here aren't tracking correctly. We've had a lot of problems with this spreadsheet with the new contracts. We are working towards a new style of delivering this information. We will compile it all together like you're seeing here. However, we do plan to move towards a model where each individual city will get their own sheet with their usage and where they sit for the year. Hopefully it'll be a more user-friendly display of what you guys are doing with your water. So yeah, this one's getting pretty muddled up. So we're working on it. It's been a tough struggle, but we're getting there. So any questions on your guys' water usage to date? All right, that rolls right into item D. That's our project updates. The membrane module rack replacement, I didn't get that to actually did change. That project is now complete. We have replaced 5 out of the 6 membrane racks. The 6th rack was not replaced, well, it was installed in, I think, 2017, I believe it was. So we're seeing those racks get about 15 years of life out of the membrane modules. They do recommend replacing them at 10. We did do a module autopsy to look at the conditions of the fibers and the plastic shells. They actually looked really, really good for their age and having not been replaced at year 10. So I think that we will likely push out the replacement of that rack 6 since it was 2017. I don't think we'll replace it in 2027. We might go into the early 2030s before we decide to replace that. And as you guys know, it's a pretty expensive project. Each rack's on the magnitude of about $300,000 to replace. But that project is complete. All 5 racks have been replaced at this time. We're really happy about that one. The spillway assessment and investigation, we did receive a alternatives analysis from our consultant GEI up at the spillway. We do plan on sharing that with the TAC group and getting their thoughts on the alternatives proposed. We did have some substantial comments on the plan to tie it back to some previous studies that were done for non-destructive and destructive testing. So we're waiting for the the consultant GEI to make those revisions, and then we plan to share that with the TAC group. The geotechnical testing for the terminal reservoir dam, we did have a meeting with DSOD just this last week. To explain some of the financial hurdles with performing some of the additional analysis that they are recommending. They would like us to do a 2D flak analysis, which is essentially like a finite element analysis of the dam, and a left abutment fault analysis. There is a fault that runs through the left abutment of the terminal reservoir. We are working on how to fund those two assessments. It's on the magnitude of about $250,000 to do those two assessments. DSOD explained that as long as we provide a plan with our efforts to move the project forward, they're okay with that. They kind of alluded to a timeline of around, they'd like to see something happen over the next 2 to 3 years with those assessments. So in this next budget cycle, I'm hoping that we can start moving some money around to start funding, at least put some money in place to get a bucket together of funds to fund that. So cathodic protection repair project, no real change on that. We're still kind of we got some comments from DWR about the transient monitoring station, and we're still working through those. The fire tank replacement project, that's permanently on hold pending future funding availability. And one thing that didn't make it on here, it's was a little off my radar, was the urban water management plan. There was one that was due here for 2025. The due date for it to the state is July of 2026. Our consultants are working on it. We plan to make that date, no problem, but it just didn't land on this project update. So, and the budget for that one's around $60,000 for the urban water management plan. Any questions on the project updates?
Thank you. Any questions from the committee members? No. Oh, yes.
Just really quick, are you seeing an impact on reduction of grant opportunities at this point, or are they still tracking kind of along regular expectations?
I think they're kind of tracking on regular expectations. We actually just worked on the congressional earmarks, just came down, so we're working on those, and so we're kind of making some broad buckets to put some money in those and try to get those earmarks through Congress. We'll see how it shakes out, but Lopez is definitely on the list. So
thank you, Mr. Spiegel. I don't have any other questions. No other questions from the committee. Any comments from members of the public on the operations report, items A through D? Seeing none, thank you very much. We'll move on to item 5, the Lopez Recreation Report. And we have...
Hello, I'm Brian Wilder, Parks Superintendent, Slo County Parks, and here to give the Recreation Report. As you can imagine, visitation was much lower than we see in the summertime. Holidays, rain events also contributed to that. We had about 22,000 visitors over the course of 2 months in November and December. Not a lot of activities planned either. Right now we're planning for the Cal Poly Triathlon. That's scheduled for March 7th. That's a big event that's held annually, so our staff's busy meeting with them, getting things ready for that event. Projects, as you can imagine, most of our staff is busy doing off-season stuff, so we've been doing a lot of dock work, buoy replacements, things of that nature. We've had a slight rise in the lake level, so that's correlated in a little bit of off-season work for us. And the other major project that's going on right now is a water replacement, the water tank replacement project. They're currently constructing the roof right now. It's moving along as expected. We'll probably be done around April 1st, weather pending, so we'll see how that goes, but we really have a good head start to get that done before the busy season starts up again for us. Some things in our aquatic invasive species program, also known as our quagga inspection program. We're applying again for a QZ grant through the Department of Fish and Wildlife. That's enabled us to hire an outside contractor called Muscle Dogs. We're trying to continue that partnership for the following year. So we'll be basically putting in another renewal package for that grant in March. We expect to probably get it. It's worked very well for us, so we're really happy to have them and part of our team there. We had about 953 vessels visit the park in November and December. Out of those, 4 were rejected for various reasons, mostly because they're not clean and dry. Some other coordination with Fish and Wildlife. We just had a trout plant, rainbow trout from Fillmore Hatchery. That was on January 7th, 2,000 pounds of rainbow trout. It was our first of the season. And other than that, staff is working diligently to repair a lot of our trash receptacles. We've had, as I mentioned at a previous meeting, a lot of bear activity in the park. Really coincides with our summer crowds and food availability, so we're trying to repair some dumpsters that are at one time were bear-proof that may not be now. So we're working on fixing those. They're very expensive to buy new, so we're also looking at some grant opportunities to help us purchase some more. As you can imagine, we have a lot of trash receptacles, and it's hard to replace them all. It's a high cost to our operation. And that concludes what I'm going to share today, unless anybody has questions.
Thank you, Mr. Wilder. Any questions from members of the committee? No? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wilder. I especially appreciate your, all of your work, but especially on the invasive species control with the quagga, what did you call it, the name of the program?
Well, that was Muscle Dogs. That's a contractor we use. Yeah, the quagga mussel. It's also great. Zebra mussel. Yeah. Any invasive species, basically, is what they're looking for. It's a a landscape that's changing quickly throughout the state. So, you know, I'm really proud of our staff. We've been very diligent about our program, and it's worked very well.
Yes, thank you. I've heard horror stories from other places where they haven't had a program, and the situation is so far out of control that it's disabling their use of the reservoir. So,
yeah.
For sure. Water, yeah. So
thank you.
Thank you for all your hard work.
Thanks.
All right. Okay. I'm sorry, did I go to the public on this item? Any member of the public wish to comment on the recreation report? All right, seeing none, we'll go to item six, informational items. Part A is the five-year CIP.
Yep.
Mr. Spiegel.
Yep, so we presented this, the five-year CIP to the TAC, and that this month it actually landed, it was yesterday. Usually we have a little more time before we meet with you guys. However, this year was kind of an anomaly, so there's only two items on this. You guys typically shoot for about a $750,000 target for your CIP projects. There's two items. I know it's a little hard to see on here. We're earmarking $300,000 for the HCP project. We do plan on changing the name. It's been held carried over for several years with the in-stream studies. That is not what we're doing. We're just continued development of the HCP. And then Lopez litigation is set at $450,000 out of that $750,000. So one comment that we did get from the TAC yesterday was just they would like to see us push this out for a total of 5 years and try to take our best guess at what projects and things they think we might need to do through that time just to help with their rate studies and future budgeting. So we will work on making that more complete.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from the committee members? I have one. You said you renamed it. Is it would be item six, Lopez HCP litigation? Is that it? Is that what you're referring
no,
to?
No, it's the line item number four. So it says HCP and it says in-stream studies of AG Creek. A long time ago, that's what it was called because we were doing in-stream studies, but right now we're doing development of the HCP. So we need to just change the name.
Oh, you're going to be changing that item four?
Yeah, it hasn't.
Okay.
Yeah. So the next time you see this, it'll be changed. Yeah.
And then the litigation item, I guess it. Maybe that's item five and a half because six goes down onto.
Yeah.
Valley.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Got some,
okay. Got it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So. Two questions. Is the date in the upper right hand corner correct? It says 12/6/2024.
That is not correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that's supposed to be 12/6/2025.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then as far as the HCP goes, I thought we had completed that project.
So the draft has been submitted to U.S. Fish and Wildlife and the National Marine Fisheries, but that doesn't mean that the work's done on it.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just, I have just one follow-up. We submitted that. You submitted that October 1st?
Yep. Yeah.
Any feedback? From the feds?
It sounds like National Marine Fisheries has had some staffing issues, and before the government shut down and before the submittal on October 1st, they did mention that I believe they said that they needed about 120 days to review it at a minimum, and then we had the government shut down, which would add to it, and then it sounds like there's some funding and staffing issues currently with getting to reviewing it. So I don't believe we've heard much from them at this moment. So,
and just to clarify for the line item for litigation, that is just the litigation side. It's not remediating any litigate issues that are discovered from the litigation.
Correct.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, I'll go to the public on this. Any members?
I just want to add something because it was brought up at the TAC. There are carry forwards. Someone brought it up at the TAC. Does this mean that, you know, my division is, you know, kind of dead in the water on doing projects? I would say no. We've budgeted money in previous years that will carry forward into this year. Mm-hmm. So we plan on continuing the efforts on those projects. Examples being the spillway investigations and the seismic remediation potential, EQ pumps for our membrane, you know, racks, things like that. That all has carry forward money. So that's not directly displayed here, but the budget that we bring in, I believe, March to you guys, that'll be the complete budget for zone 3, and that should show where all the carry forwards are and kind of show you guys what projects can still continue. So
Thank you, Mr. Spiegel. Any other questions or comments? Any member of the public wish to comment on the five-year capital improvement plan? Seeing none, all right, we'll move to item B, information item 6B, fish passage feasibility assessment.
So yeah, at the last meeting, I think you guys requested that we do either a presentation or post the feasibility study online. I thought what I would touch on today is kind of the process that we use to develop the feasibility assessment. And then the feasibility assessment is posted online on our Zone 3 webpage if you want to find it there. Or if you can't find it, shoot me an email. I'll definitely provide it for you. So we had gone out to bid with a company, or we selected McMillan through a bidding process. And they prepared this document as part of a presentation to National Marine Fisheries and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and I believe CDF&W. The purpose of this was to outline what the goals were and an overview of the technical memorandums that were prepared. The first one was the draft design criteria tech memo, and then the draft fish passage alternatives pre-screening evaluation. And then they offered up an opportunity for those federal regulators to comment. So obviously the problem identified is that the Lopez Dam is an impassable barrier on AG Creek, blocking fish passage. National Marine Fisheries requested that we do a volitional fish, a fish passage assessment of Lopez Dam with volitional options. So that's what we did. So the first tech memo that was prepared was focusing around the species itself, the biological design criteria and the hydraulic and hydrology needed for passage. So our consultant looked at the target species, which was the steelhead trout, specifically the South Central California Coast distinct population segment steelhead trout. They identified their overall migration season between adult upstream migration and smolt out migration, so two different time periods for that spawning process. Another item that they then looked at was during upstream migration and that migration window, what was the characteristics of the dam at the time and what sort of water elevations would we see over time. So they took the historical record that we have of Lopez Lake and its lake elevation over time. So I guess the most important thing here is to show that upstream migration is from December 1st through April 30th, and our reservoir has seen a fluctuation of 69.3 feet historically over those years. On the downstream migration end, that was February 15th through June 15th, we also see approximately 62 feet of change in water surface elevation that we would have to work with throughout the historical period. Then they looked at what kind of flows would be required, because specifically we're kind of looking at volitional options and natural fishways, so they needed to know what sort of flows they needed to accommodate for those passages. The design criteria that we looked at were fish ladders, nature-like fishways, fish screening facilities, pre-sort holding pools, and fish bypass facilities. Then we moved on to the pre-screening draft, which was Tech Memo 3. All of these tech memos are included in the Fish Passage Feasibility Assessment if you want to see all the background associated with the work effort, which is posted to the website. So then they determined, this little table was great by Fish and Wildlife Service. What is a volitional option? So it kind of works you down from the top. Fishways, you have technical fishways, you have nature-like fishways, which had a little laser pointer. But then you have upstream of the dam and you have downstream of the dam. And so obviously volitional means under their own volition so that they can do it without any assistance. So that was the primary target. Those volitional options they're all identified here. I kind of skip ahead because we do see a lot more of what they looked at here. So examples of volitional fishways, they showed us the Howland Fish Bypass Channel, a nature-like fishway on the Caribou Dam located in Brunette River in Vancouver. The biggest thing to note of these examples was the total head fluctuation of that reservoir or dam and like what the hydraulic head was. So you can see for this one, the reservoir fluctuation was only 2 feet for the top one, less than a foot for the other one. And I remind you that it was 62 feet for our dam. The Okanaga Lake outlet structure, again, less than 1 foot of fluctuation. The Opal Springs one, that was about less than 3 feet of fluctuation there. They did show some very long downstream examples, such as the 650-foot long bypass chute connected on the Trabuco Creek chute and Poolhead Rough and Channel Fishway, and that was across the I-5. These were developments that our consultant did work on, McMillan. So then in this one, they did start to look at, you know, how many exit pools would be required as part of a volitional fish passage project. So it was brought to our attention that some of the biggest ones in the world are approximately 20 step pools. This would require 70 based on our dam's elevation and fluctuating water surface elevation. The fish passage technologies and upstream categories were we looked at chutes, different pool types, nature-like and others. So you can see that they looked at quite the extensive list of different types of means of moving fish up and down beyond a dam. And if you have any questions, please definitely interrupt me along the way if you have questions. And then obviously we have upstream methods, and then we have downstream methods. Again, physical barriers, behavioral guidance devices, structural and non-structural, and then other methods like trap and haul, reservoir drawdown, dam removal, things like that. So it was a very comprehensive list of what was considered. And these are further examples of what these devices look like. And then we worked, and then they evolved into the pre-screening evaluation. So they, based on the challenges with the reservoir and, you know, fluctuating water surface elevation, they immediately went to, do we advance this one for evaluation or do we not? So in the upstream technology, McMillan decided to advance vertical slots and trap and haul. And this was presented to U.S. Fish and Wildlife and National Marine Fisheries before we moved on with the full assessment. The downstream technologies that were decided to be advanced was the bypass pipe, the barrier guidance nets, and trap and haul. They then put this into an evaluations matrix. That matrix looked at biological efficiency, constructability, operation, design approach, environmental impact, regulatory compliance, and financial.
I have a question.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, could you go back to the non-volitional? These are the ones where the fish get a ride.
Yes.
Is that better? Okay. So I saw one. This was this is probably an historic.
Yeah.
Image or something, but it was like a, I think it was called a fish wheel. It was like a Ferris wheel.
Okay.
For fish, you know, they get on it and then they get, yeah.
Okay.
And it, yeah, it was from, it was some historical image I saw.
Okay.
So it doesn't seem as, it's as fantastical as any of these. I don't know if it's what the range of creativity is.
I feel like it was pretty creative on, you know, all the options that they looked at.
Yeah. For like current technology.
Yes.
Like they
yes.
like fish the fish riding, the fish amusement park type rides.
Yeah.
These are all the current offerings in for like currently engineered.
Yeah, I mean straight down to pneumatic fish tubes to literally, you know, blow them up and over kind of thing. Yeah. You know. So
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I believe it was very comprehensive. Yes. And I'll remind you guys, McMillan was also, they were heavily involved in the Klamath Dam and dam removals along the Klamath River as well. Yeah, the Helix one was very impressive in my opinion, right in the middle. That one was quite the structure. Yes.
On the trap and haul, is there a fatality rate for the fish that is estimated, or do they all survive? This is coming from an honest, I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm not a bio, I could not even begin to opine on any
okay.
of that, sorry.
No, I mean, well, I would like it answered at some point, okay. so thank you.
Yeah, it did surprise me, you know, in my limited knowledge of things, when someone said trap and haul, I thought, yes, we're just going to throw them in a truck and drive them over. I was very well informed that these trucks are, I mean, you got to keep the water at a certain temperature, it's got to be oxygenated, all these things. It's very, it's definitely a more scientific process than what I imagined throwing them in the bed of a truck kind of thing. So
it sounds like...
That's why I'm an engineer and not a biologist. So.
And it sounds like all these systems are, like, approved for use under certain circumstances, and they cost a certain amount of money to operate and issue tickets and that kind of thing.
Yes, these all the examples shown here have been approved on projects throughout the world. Yeah.
Thank you.
And I think just to add, I mean, Brian mentioned Fillmore Hatchery brought in some trout, and I've seen a couple of those, and those are not necessarily delicately handled. Have you seen? I mean, they back the truck up and let them rip is the stuff I've seen with the trout anyway.
They have a truck that's, as David said, oxygenated in a certain temp, but they back up the launch ramp, basically connect a tube, open a valve, and they come shooting out with the water.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's some casualty rate, but not significantly high that they've changed their operation. Sounds like the county pays for them by the pound. You said 7,000 pounds.
This is part of their... hatchery program that operates off of fines throughout the state. Okay. So we don't actually pay for those. They just deliver them whenever they have fish that they think are suitable for
there
our environment. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have seen them drop by aircraft as well. So, I'm sure there is a mortality rate.
Yeah. Thank you.
Only the daredevils survive. And none of these took into account impact on the other two species that now are part of the litigation conversation, correct?
Correct. This was specific to NIMS' request of a volitional option for steelhead.
Yes. Okay, thanks.
Yep. So I think we left off on the alternatives evaluation. So they developed the seven categories that they would evaluate to. They developed a scoring matrix. I see smolt mortalities in here, adult mortalities in here, so that was taken into account as well. And they provided a breakdown of all the options. And then, and since this was given to the federal agencies, they gave them a TAC feedback process of, you know, I think an email address or something. If they had questions or comments, they could email our consultant. And that concludes the... The overall assessment is on the website if you'd like to go see which options were, how the final verdict turned out. I believe it was trap and haul that was the preferred option, specifically due to the volitional options being, it would likely be some of the largest structures ever, like in the world at this time for step pools. Yeah.
I'll put us on the map.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was very comprehensive and somewhat technical, I would say, but very thorough. I appreciate it. I think it would take me a little bit to really absorb this. But let's ask committee members if you have any other comments.
I just have a question, and maybe this was covered a couple months ago. How much did this study cost?
We earmarked $250,000 for the project, and I believe... I don't know exactly what the final billings were, but I think it was around $198,000.
Okay, and is it done now?
I have a conference call with the consultant, I believe, next week to wrap up any items that they think that we might need to consider, but I believe it's mostly complete. Yeah.
Okay, so essentially $200,000 for this.
So I really appreciate the breadth of this evaluation. I think it's super critical. And I'm wondering if you would indulge me, if I summarize from a layperson standpoint, is a couple of significant findings here are this. Number one, we're talking about volitional versus, so fish getting through on their own versus needing a ride, needing a mechanical or human assistance of some sort. Okay. And then, and the other is for volitional, for them to handle the trip by themselves. A key feature of that is the what you call the head level or the fluctuation. So you had a slide, the Lopez Reservoir summary slide. Sorry to make you go back.
Yeah, okay.
I don't have a slide number, but okay. Okay, so this is a key fact in the analysis is that at Lopez, that there is this fluctuation, I'm just gonna call it 70 feet, from the minimum pool to the maximum. And at any time in its operation, it could fluctuate that much. So it fluctuates as much as 70 feet. Okay.
Yeah, during, and I just want to point, and that's during the migration period.
During
so
the
migration. That was from, December to April.
Okay,
yeah.
So during the period of time when fish would be wanting to go upstream. Okay, so it was that fluctuation that seems to be the significant factor in terms of this types of solutions.
Yeah.
For volitional,
yes.
Because you mentioned volitional types that would be within 1 to 3 feet or so. Mm-hmm. Was it that small? So we're talking about a very small threshold.
Yes.
And a very big difference between what a fish could reasonably be, where we could modify something to where the fish could reasonably get up there by themselves.
Yes.
Okay. And then to get over that, in order to overcome that amount, it's a very expensive proposition to use these volitional strategies. So if you think about, it's not a good perspective, but steps for people, like if you were to construct a series of steps, these would be so that the steps weren't too high for a person to climb.
Yeah.
They have to be shallow steps, and so they have to start way down and go way up.
Yeah.
And so we're talking about, many 70 steps. I mean, it almost is. It almost does match that, like one step per foot, let's say. Okay, so 70 steps, and that doesn't exist anywhere.
Correct.
So it would put us on the map. But I don't know if that's what we want to be known for or what we have the money to be. I do like the Ferris wheel idea.
Yeah.
I thought that would be kind of fun. Okay, because it could be for the fish during the regular season. Okay, all right. So that really is a threshold. Is the what this report finds is that volitional options are not financially feasible, given that. Okay, so then we go into the what did you call non-volitional? So needing help.
Yeah.
All right, and then the needing help options are they all equally valid? And we're just talking about cost. Are they all equal in terms of effectiveness?
Effectiveness. I don't know if I could answer that. Like how effective each one is.
Okay.
But they all have their own design challenges, right? Like a trap and haul program. Obviously, you got to get all the fish into an area to collect them and then move them upstream.
Okay.
A non-volitional option, say like the hydraulic one or the pneumatic one to blow them up and over. Well, now you need a really long pipe to go all the way up the dam. You still got to collect them at the bottom and kind of shoot them all the way up to the top. And so, and there's two issues that are here is that one, you have a really tall dam. And then, so one thing is you got to get the fish up and over the dam. Now that they're up and over the dam, they got to make their way up into the tributaries above the creek, above the reservoir.
Okay.
Then when they come back down to out-migrate, then you have the issue of this fluctuating water supply, right? So the water could be 70 feet lower, so now you need all these step pools on the backside of the dam just to get them up and over the dam on the backside.
Okay.
So what you would see on the front would be almost mimicked or mirrored on the back.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Thank you. All right. All right. And then if we're looking at among the non-volitional options, I think the trap and haul is the I'll just say the most cost-effective of the non-volitional options.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Now let me, if I don't have any more questions or comments from committee members.
I just wanted to thank you because I asked for this in the next meeting, voila. And now I feel like I have a much stronger grasp of what's important.
Yeah, and there's a lot more to this, and I definitely recommend you look at the tech memos that are posted with the final assessment. I could have spent hours going over this with you guys, so I wanted to try to pare it down as much as possible. Those step pools, there's certain sizes. The steps can only be so much. They have to hold a certain amount of water. you know, there's a lot that goes into it, and those are all detailed in the technical memos that are attached as appendices in the final assessment.
Okay. Can I go to the public now? Any members of the public wish to speak on this item, fish passage assessment? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back. And, yeah, I would also just like to say thank you. I do think this is valuable information to have. I really appreciate it. Okay. Moving on then to item 7, action items. Do we have any action items?
No action items today.
Okay. And number 8, so are there any action items for the board?
Not today.
In either category?
Nope.
Okay. How about future agenda items? Any members have requests for future agenda items?
One thing that occurred to me, and I realize I'm not going to be here any longer, assuming my cousin gets approved by the Board of Supervisors, I think next week, but since there has been some turnover on the committee, it might be nice to schedule a site visit to the water treatment plant. That is something I've gotten to do on several occasions, and I think it's of real value.
Super helpful. Thank you. That's a great, yeah. Appreciate that. All right, and then item 10 is any other comments from committee members?
I had a question. There was a comment and public comments about a permit that wasn't connected to the litigation that was talked about. Could somebody clarify that for me? Because I have no idea what he's talking about.
About our water rights permit?
Yes, that's what it was.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's our right to divert water from Arroyo Grande Creek and store it behind Lopez Dam. That's what the permit's for.
The county doesn't have that permit, or you're seeking that permit? What he was talking about?
We have a permit, yes.
Oh, you have a permit,
yes.
So you're not seeking it.
We are not seeking it, yes.
Yeah. And what was the question?
So I,
as maybe Brad can help clarify.
Well, and I, okay. Yeah, it's so the water rights are very complicated, but you apply for an application, you get a water right permit, you operate under that water right permit, then you get I believe it moves on to a license if you've operated under that permit for so long. And so we do not have a license yet, but we're operating under the permit that was given to us by the state.
Those are issued under the State Water Resources Control Board, which is not an agency that has anything to do with the litigation, to my knowledge. They're not party on either side of the litigation.
Correct.
They've described it exactly how I understand it as well. It's a two-step process, and the State Board is woefully behind schedule on licensing and everything and those kinds of things. I know there's been conversations between the county staff, and this I've just heard anecdotally, and the State Board, and they're okay with it. I think one of the comments a couple of meetings ago was that, we should be concerned, the contractors, because the county doesn't have the proper water rights permits, and I just wanted to bring that up to clear the air that it's as far as the State Board's concerned, my understanding is that we're fine.
Yeah. Yeah, and there was an application applied for, I can't remember what year, I think it was in the late 90s, on behalf of the water right permit. It was actually an application. I don't want to speak this too much because I don't know all the details, but I'll say this, the State Water Board is working with us on moving things forward. One of the big pivotal pieces of that is the HCP. We cannot finalize the water right permit issue until we know how much water is going down the creek as part of the HCP. So they go hand in hand, and so we are advancing them both. The state is well aware of where we're at. We've kept them, up to speed on where things are. So we are working with the state as same as we're working towards getting the HCP approved.
I guess I just had one question that was related, I guess, to, the study, but sort of peripherally.
In all of the work that's been done related to the steelhead, has anybody looked at whether or not there's any spawning activity that's actually occurring below the dam? I mean, there's a very significant alluvial section of the creek, essentially just west of the dam. Is there any spawning activity that is occurring there?
So as part of the preliminary injunction, we did go and do spawning surveys within the creek. I don't know all the details with that, or if there was some or there wasn't. I don't know the answer to that at this time. But we did do those spawning surveys, yes.
And is that information available somewhere?
I can ask my environmental staff if it is, yeah.
Okay, I mean, I think that's super relevant because, you know, I mean, we didn't even get into the potential cost of the solutions that we're considering, but if it's happening somewhere below the dam, it seems like it would be a moot point.
Could that be in the HCP, the draft HCP, potentially?
I don't believe that's in there.
Okay.
I mean, monitoring and looking for those things is. We have a whole monitoring and reporting program as a part of the HCP. I don't know if there's current information in there about kind of the baseline.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So were Zone 3 funds used for the study? If so, shouldn't they be made available online? Because I agree. I think that's like a really critical piece of information, and I actually would like to see that. I hadn't thought about that. Thank you. You're going to be missed. So is that going to be available for?
Yeah, I'll check. I can see if we can make that available.
And then on the agenda here, there's a web link at the bottom. Is that where everything is posted? The
yes, that's where it should be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that would you be able to quickly throw that up on the screen? Just the today's agenda. There we go. Okay, so I don't know if you can expand that any for the viewers, but www.slocounty.ca.gov address, that is the, there we go, thank you. So that's where Zone 3 Advisory Committee agendas are posted, as well as the fish passage study that we just got a summary for, and the draft HCP. We could also find that there?
I don't know if we've posted the draft HCP there yet or not. Because it was in draft and form, I don't think that's why we put it on there.
Okay.
But let me find out if we can post
okay.
that there.
Okay. If
not.
It's a public document,
yeah.
Being that it's been submitted, that'd be helpful.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. Good questions. Thank you, everyone. Good question.
In the lawsuit, did the Coast Keepers give information, you know, the historical data about, you know, the numbers of steelhead, or are they just talking more in the current years, or?
Mr. Spiegel, if I may, I'm not sure we can talk about the lawsuit in this forum.
Oh, that's true.
I don't think we're privileged to do that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. But the lawsuit's online, correct?
The injunction is posted online. I believe the vacated portion of it from the Ninth Circuit's online as well.
At the same address?
Not here. That you would actually find through the court system. All the city's councils, like your guys' legal counsel, has access to everything that's available.
Well, and that is the thing I brought up last time, is the three of us for sure have access to that. I don't know on the boards or on the districts what that looks like, and then for the private people, there's absolutely zero.
But if it is a public document, so if the courts are posting it in a public portal, if it's not attorney-client privileged, it should be accessible?
That is correct, yeah.
So
we just don't post it to the Zone 3.
Could you check if on this website, if your council would allow a link to the court documents, or at least give people a way to navigate to them from here, because there is such interest, and I think the court documents can be difficult to locate if you're just starting from scratch and searching around. I don't think it's like Google. So if that
yeah, no problem.
Okay.
Okay, that's great. Thanks.
Thank you.
And I would say that at least I think the CSDs both have legal representation in that group, and yeah, I'm getting the documents. Some of them attorney-client privilege, others not. And I think that's probably not a bad idea, somehow to, you know, at least put a link to it, pointing to it.
Okay, great.
Thanks for chairing.
Oh, sure.
You did great.
Thank you. All right. Okay. All right. Any other, anything else for the good of the group? If not, then I will adjourn the meeting to March 19th, 2026, 10:30 a.m. at Pismo Beach at 760 Maddie Road.